Here we go.
Hey, now.
Hey.
Turn on The Rush with Reshmi Nair and Scott MacArthur.
This is Smart Speakers on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
And we say hello to Bruce Arthur, a Toronto-based columnist for the Toronto Star, and Laurel Walczak, associate professor and director of the Global Experiential Sport Lab at Toronto Metropolitan University. Hello to you both.
Hey, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Happy Thursday. We were talking earlier about this review of the Cannabis Act and what could come out of it. It seems like it definitely needs a review here. Many people complaining about the number of cannabis stores they've seen popping up and concerns about the illegal industry still existing. Laurel, what should we tackle, where, when, and how?
Well, it seems like the issues here is it's actually a good time to address it. And I did take a review of George Smitherman, I guess is the CEO of the Cannabis Act. And I happen to agree with him. And what he says is that it's really about the taxes are so high, both what are being imposed by the feds and the provincial government, and then how difficult it is for them to compete. So, you know, if that is the issue, and perhaps there are more, but it seems to be the glaring issue, then I think that this obviously can be addressed pretty quickly. I mean, one of the things that I hope for is the fact that, you know, we decided to legalize cannabis in this country. We have gone through, let's say, a couple of phases of it. Now it's oversaturated. So we have to go back to the original goals in the first place to make it successful and make it so that the growers, the producers, the retailer, everybody is mutually benefiting from this legalization. And hopefully the ones they're not benefiting are those in the illicit market, because that's the problem in the first place.
Bruce, I mean, it's staggering the number of pot shops there are in the city. In fact, there are more than there are Tim Hortons shops. So you got a better chance.
Not
of
yet.
You got a better chance of getting a doobie than you do of getting a coffee.
A double double.
And yet, when you walk down the street, there seems to be just visually as much plywood on the windows of now defunct pot shops as there are actually functioning pot shops. Meanwhile, some of the big players, too, are reporting massive quarterly losses. I mean, changes are needed here.
Well, this is also what happens when you plug in an entire industry that wasn't there before, because, of course, there's going to be an expansion and then a shakeout. And now the question is the underlying health of the industry and how it fits into the underlying health of society. I think those are two things you'd really like to know. I'd like to actually see how much the legal industry has cut into the illegal drug industry, because that's an unmitigated societal good to cut into that. But that said, the idea that the taxes are too high, I mean, the taxes are really high on cigarettes, but that's an established industry where, yeah, there's people selling cigarettes illegally, but it's not as much of an industry as it is in pot, because we haven't had long enough to have it get displaced. This is all part of the shakeout of, again, creating a new industry for a product that wasn't legally available before. My big worry in all this, and I hope the review kind of shows this. I was talking to someone who deals with the medical system the other day. My big worry is when Canada eventually gets to further legalization of drugs, which I think we're going to need to get to. I hope this review shows the need for an all government, all society problem-solving approach to it. You can't just legalize it and then let it kind of happen and then figure out your problems later. When we get to harder drugs, I would hope that this review gives us a roadmap to bolster all the things we need to bolster when we get to what is inevitably going to be the next stage in drug legalization.
Let's move to Iran, where the world is now watching protesters publicly out in the streets in Iran. That is sounds of the protests, and it is historical already because of the large groups making these sounds in the streets. It's illegal to do so there, but they are protesting in Tehran, and this is because Mahsa Amini, a 22-year-old Kurdish woman, died after being taken into custody. She was injured in custody in a detention center. She collapsed. She was in a coma for 3 days, and she died, all because officers took her into custody. Her hijab was not covering her hair. They said she violated the law. Laurel, your thoughts on what we're seeing in Iran?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that they're protesting because, you know, that what the morality police that they're called, or the guidance patrols, like, why do they have to baton and bash her head and put these lashes out? I mean, if someone is accused of violating the law by not covering their hair, then what they're saying is that we need to re-educate you to cover your hair. But this can be done in a way that's not violent. And so protesting, this protesting is also about the ability to say, like, please don't have violence against us. And this is ridiculous that the women are being treated this way. And I mean... Many women here in Canada, all over the world, are wearing hijabs that are expressing their variety degrees of religiosity. So it's not about that. It's also about the fact that you need to not be violent with people, period. This is historical for Iran too. They've had multiple revolutions, and in this, you've seen multiple protests. And so I think that this is, and they flip-flops. There's been times before 1979, before Ayatollah Khomeini came into power, when the last Shah was a little bit more progressive and modern with, let's say, the clothing wearing. He wasn't. He had his own challenges. But putting this mandatory enforcement, I just want to give this one quote of a politician, a past politician, and I don't recall her name, but it was something along the lines of, they're in Iran, the women will respect the veil, whether they wear a veil or not, and whether it's mandatory, but coercion and violence does not work. And I happen to agree with that.
Bruce, your thoughts. We hear of protests in Iran sporadically, on and off. They probably happen more than we even know. Could this be a catalyst for some degree of considerable change in that country?
That's always what you hope for. I'm in awe of the protesters in the streets of Iran. I'm in awe of the protesters in Russia right now regarding the war. Like, that takes real courage. There's a lot of people in this country who pretended to be freedom fighters over the last 2 years. And this is what the real stuff is. This is actual, genuine human courage. It's really incredible. The protests seem widespread enough that you kind of have two options here. And this is what happens when repression causes this level of response. Either there's going to be a crackdown and it's going to be really ugly and these protests will be suppressed by the state, or they're going to spread. I don't really see how it's just going to stay kind of where it is, right? Like, it's going to get bigger or it's going to get smaller. You hope that this is the catalyst for meaningful change that is beneficial to the women of Iran and to Iran as a whole. The worry is that this is a relatively new policy, right? Like, there's been more of a hardcore crackdown just within the last year or so, last couple of years. It will take a significant amount of protest in order for this to be anything other than something that is suppressed. And that's what you worry about. It's just, this is a hardline country. It's been a hardline country for a really long time. And if you lose control, then that's when regimes can do things that are dangerous. And that's what I worry about right now in Iran.
Tomorrow's Lottomax jackpot is an estimated $70 million plus 31 Max Millions. Text Max and your name to 71010 for your chance to win $100 in Lottomax tickets with Encore. Standard message rates apply to all entries. Lottomax, dream to the max. Our smart speakers continue. Bruce Arthur, Toronto-based columnist for the Toronto Star. Laurel Walczak, associate professor and director of the Global Experiential Sport Lab at Toronto Metropolitan University. Bruce, we'll start with you on this one because this is one that hits close to your heart. Post Media has announced that it will stop printing 9 major daily newspapers on Mondays in the near future. That includes the Vancouver Sun and the Vancouver Province, the Ottawa Citizen, the Ottawa Sun, the Montreal Gazette. The list goes on and on. More difficulties for the newspaper industry and a sign of the times.
My first job was at the National Post in 2001. I got hired full time in September of 2001. I got laid off 17 days in because Global News had bought the Post from Conrad Black, and they asked us to cut $100 million out of the budget or something like that. It was a huge number, and I got laid off. I worked for Post Media until 2014. And sometime late in my tenure there, an executive showed me the list of circulation that you had, because they'd been bought by the hedge funds in about 2011. And if you looked at the list of circulation by day for all the newspapers, you could see that on the Sunday issues, a lot of them were going to disappear, and they did. And then if you looked at that, the chart one over, the Monday issues, a lot of papers did not have big circulation on Mondays. And this doesn't surprise me, but what it is this. The people who own the Post Media chain, which is the biggest chain in this country for newspapers, are trying to extract every dollar they can while diminishing and degrading the product, and it's not going to go the other way. This is going in one direction. They are making their product worse. They are paying fewer journalists. They are doing worse work. They have earlier deadlines. The deadline for the Ottawa Citizen is 2 p.m. in the afternoon for most of the paper. Wow. This is no way to have any kind of news gathering operation. And I am terrified of the day, because there's still a ton of great journalists who work for this chain. I take this really personally, because I care about a lot of the people who still work for these newspapers. This thing is going to crash, and eventually it's going to wind up in bankruptcy. And the biggest purveyor of newspaper news in the country, I don't know what's going to happen to it. As it stands right now, there are four newspapers in the country that publish 7 days a week: Journal de Montréal, Journal de Québec, Toronto Star, Toronto Sun. That's it. And the industry, as much as I know that people talk about how the government probably shouldn't fund the industry, something needs to save the news gathering industry in this country, because it's a pillar of democracy. And I wish I had the answers.
Yeah, I wish it was the companies that own them, right? Laurel, what are your thoughts? I mean, the newspaper, people love the newspaper, and I get that we need to be digital. And if I want to keep a copy of a story, I can print it off and hold on to it. But there's nothing like a newspaper clipping.
Oh, well, yeah, there isn't, but I think it's inevitable. I mean, this is evolving. I mean, I teach at a media school. We saw, you know, even looking at radio has evolved, and it's not, I don't think it's necessarily, we want to be able to protect the journalism, the journalist side. We want to be able to protect the integrity of the work. But however, the way the platforms are going and the emerging technologies and the way that audiences are consuming content is what's happening here. There is innovation. People are looking for things real time. We are on multiple screens. And so, you know, I have to tell you, I do not have a television, and I do not get magazines, and I do not buy newspapers. The only time I get a newspaper is when I go to my parents' house, who are 80, and they still get it delivered to their door, but I guess not anymore. So I think that there's all these new ways. Yes, I mean, I can remember that, getting the newspaper and opening up and looking through it, but we're beyond that. And this is not something, I mean, this is not news, because this is actually, besides the fact that people are losing their jobs, that, I mean, that absolutely, but it has been evolving for many, many years. So this was inevitable. I think that to take a look at more competition, more platforms, and different ways that we're able to consume content. I mean, think about the real time. And I know that, you know, Bruce, you probably have an opinion on this, but when something happens and I'm not around to like go and take a look at Google to find out, I quickly go to Twitter on my phone, immediately onto Twitter to go. I'll be able to find it immediately on Twitter. Then I'll be able to go look for the credible journalistic story. So, I mean, this is just an evolution, and this is unfortunate, but it's the way that media is going.
Bruce, did you want to respond to that?
I would say this. A lot of the underpinning for what is information and what is thrown around in social media, not just on Twitter, but Facebook and Twitch and Snapchat and all the other stuff, comes from newspapers still. And think about this, actually. If Pierre Poilievre ever does become prime minister and he does enact what he promises to do, let's say he defunds the CBC News operation. So CBC News is actually one of the biggest pillars of news in this country. To call it bias is actually ridiculous. It's just conservatives tilting against the world. But let's say the CBC no longer has a news organization. Let's say he cancels the federal media subsidy and we lose most of the newspapers in the country. What does the media look like then? I mean, Global News has also said that they are in trouble. CTV has made a ton of cuts. The idea of news in this country, when we talk about social networks, and even this radio station, a lot of the news gets generated by professional reporters paid under news gathering organizations, no matter how that news is then packaged and sold. And the problem you get is that there's no blueprint for how to go to the next thing. right? If newspapers disappear, the only blueprint is that you get news deserts. And what happens there is you get higher corruption. This has been documented in the United States, higher corruption at local levels, higher corruption from government, less information, and bad things happen to your democracy. And that, to me, is what the stakes are. And I don't disagree with Laurel. This is where the business is going. I just think more urgency is needed to actually address and preserve it.
Go ahead.
No, please, Laurel.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's interesting about the CBC, and you think about our media in Canada, we have and where it was and where it's going. The in effort for even our traditional linear broadcasters, CBC and Rogers and Bell Media, they need to continue to be competitive. And look at how they're competing in other spaces. They need to get competitive, but also to some extent, they have had a bit of a monopoly for years. So this actually is great for competition. It's also fantastic for entrepreneurs to come in and be creating new ways that they want to consume content. But I think that, you know, I don't think that the CBC as an example should necessarily be defunded, but I do think that it needs to evolve. And I know that they've been trying to do some evolution in things like CBC Gem. And I know that there's a lot of technological innovation and research and development for the other broadcasters as just one example. I know we're talking about newspapers, but it's, you know, it's kind of in the same pot here, because this allows for these other platforms. So I agree with you that we have to be careful to make sure that the journalistic value and the integrity of the content, but there are lots of digital online. For example, The Athletic, we've got some phenomenal journalists over at The Athletic, and it's not printed. And it has never been.
But what happened there is that was a Silicon Valley experiment where they grew as fast as they could and they sold it to the New York Times.
I just want to offer.
And that's why The Athletic still exists.
I appreciate both of you speaking so highly about the public broadcaster. I will just offer, I'm a woman of color who willingly left. They need to improve their coverage on Indigenous issues, Palestinian issues. They don't even have Black journalists. They have white people there saying the N-word. So there does need to be improvement at the public broadcaster. And I would like an honest discussion about it. But I can appreciate that everyone here holds on to the legacy of that logo and what it means to you. It does mean something. People there just need to remember that. And that is our smart speakers for this Thursday afternoon. I appreciate you both. Scott MacArthur, Bruce Arthur, Laurel Walczak.